Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. Welcome to the Mad Men Machine Show 151 for March 20th, 2009, the first day of spring, I believe it is. Spring has sprung, and it's time to get out your earth boxes. I talked on a couple of shows ago about a friend told me about an earth box he bought a couple of years ago, earthbox.com. And yeah, I wish this was an advertisement for them so I could be compensated. But for $54, you get a plastic box, you get a bag of dirt, some fertilizer, and some other stuff, a pipe, a little basket or thing. You put this thing together. You put the dirt down in the bucket, down in the basket, and then you plant your seeds and you put the fertilizer on top. And through the watering tube, then, you fill this thing up once a week. And it's supposed to be an idiot-proof way of growing your garden, your vegetables, whatever. More about that in a moment. The Mad Men Machine is proud to be brought to you by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Here's the X-Ray Dogs. Remember when I looked at the price of this thing, $54. I thought $54 for a bucket, some dirt, and some other junk. My wife said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do our own. We're going to make our own self-contained gardening box. And of course, when you want to do something like this, the only thing you need to do is type into Google how to make your own self-contained gardening box. And sure enough, up comes a number of different sites or that have plans for making your own. We went out to Home Depot. We bought some baskets and tubes and pipes and, of course, bought the seeds and the potting mix. Not potting soil, but potting mix. There's a difference. And we went to Target and bought the big Rubbermaid buckets, these 18-gallon buckets. Bought six of them, but we're only making three earth boxes. How's that work? It works because you cut one of the buckets in half, turn it upside down, and put it in the other bucket. That becomes the water reservoir in the bottom of the bucket. You put holes in, you put a tube in. Well, we have first of all, I want to tell you how much it cost for us to buy three earth boxes full of components. About $160. I think we ended up with more potting mix than would have come with earth boxes. We ended up with perhaps a larger container, but still, it would have been a whole lot easier just to go buy the earth box, I gotta tell you. So what are we planting? We're planting things, you know, I've never planted stuff before. So we're going to do some tomatoes, we're going to do some cucumbers, we're going to do some radishes, we're going to do some cantaloupe and cabbage. My wife says we shouldn't plant cabbage. Cabbage is cheap enough at the store. When they have it, it's cheap enough. When they don't have it, then you want to have your own. I did go to the store the other day looking to buy a head of cabbage, and there was none there. So I'll grow my own. Thank you very much. I have no idea what's going to happen to these things. We planted the seedlings planted the seeds in little Dixie cups. Hopefully they will germinate in a week to 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever it takes. We can transplant those into the earth box, out on the deck, in the sunshine. And in a couple of months, I'll let you know whether we're eating some good old homegrown vegetables. What else is in the news? Gold for bread. Gold for bread. Saw this out at Survival Blog, a link to a YouTube video. In Zimbabwe, where the currency is basically completely collapsed now. It's completely worthless. Trillions of Zimbabwe dollars won't buy you anything. They showed this in the video. People are out in a muddy creek digging through the dirt and panning for little gold pieces. Tiny little pebbles. Pebble is too big of a word for it. Shards. That's too big of a word. particles of gold they're finding in these pans. Taking all day long to find particles of gold, and they put them in a little envelope, and they show the envelope. There's several particles. They shuffle them back and forth in the bottom of the envelope. They take that then to a market, and someone puts it on one of these little tiny scales, electronic scale. They push a button. The weight of that gold comes up, and they're able to buy a loaf of bread or something with that gold. And it's not a good portent of things to come for fiat currencies. So get your gold before you have to go panning for it, I guess, is the bottom line on that one. Another indicator of our economic times, we happened to be in Richmond last weekend, where it was rainy most of the weekend, and looking for something to do. On the way back home, we stopped at one of these gigantic stores called Bass Pro Outlets. Have you seen this thing? It's a Disneyland for hunters and fishers. Hunters and fishermen. It's enormous. It's two stories tall. Inside there is a waterfall into a pond with fish inside. A glass elevator that you can ride up to see the scenery in the place. All the possible fishing gear you can imagine that I could ever imagine, including boats inside the store, and all the hunting gear. I've never seen in one place so many guns in all my life. All along the back wall of this enormous store. And in the cases then, handguns too. Now, I've been hearing stories out of Survival Blog and on the news and other places that ammunition is getting scarce. Particularly for handguns, I guess. Well, I walked through just to kind of get a sample myself of the aisles in Bass Pro Outlets to look at the boxes of ammunition. And there were shotgun shells and there were various types of rifle slugs and things. And the shelves, to me, appeared to be full. Turned the corner, and in one section, above the section there, was labeled handgun ammunition. And I looked down at the shelves, and shockingly, the entire section was empty. Completely empty. There were about three boxes on a shelving unit that could have held thousands of boxes of ammunition. And it appears that the reports are true just by this one anecdotal evidence. That ammunition is getting scarce. I'm wondering what, I asked the question several shows ago, why is everyone running out buying a gun these days? What is going on? I'm thinking that it's not necessarily just the fact that people are afraid and they want to defend themselves in uncertain times against someone that might break into their home. But I think that another reason, and a big reason, is because people are doing it as a vote of no confidence against the government. The government is saying, in many cases, we want to restrict guns. People are saying, we don't want you to restrict guns. We're going to go buy one to put the thumb in your eye about this. So I'm thinking that's it. I'm betting a lot of people just buy a gun and they don't ever do anything with it. They just put it in a box somewhere. Just as a vote that says, we don't like the direction you're taking our country right now. And so far I've talked about the three G's, haven't I? Gold, guns, and grub. In times of economic uncertainty, gold, guns, and grub are the center of attention. And I see now that gold is up at about 950. It had a huge jump on Wednesday of this past week, Wednesday, March the 18th. When Bernanke came out, said the Fed was going to buy $1 trillion worth of stuff, monetize $1 trillion worth of stuff, $300 billion worth of U.S. bonds, hundreds of billions of mortgages and other junk that's going to become worthless. And the Chinese have come out this week, said, hey, U.S., you better be good on your loans from us. You know, we've bought all of your treasuries and all those bonds and things. You better pay back those debts and not with inflated dollars. Other central banks around the world are lowering their interest rates, making money a lot more easy to get. Some people are talking hyperinflation. Some people are talking depression. Other people are just talking simply about a monetary collapse. means the prices for all assets, there are no bids. Get to a point where there just are no bids for assets out there. Who to believe? Well, let me switch subjects and talk about an incident that I've been grappling with for the past couple of months, and that is with an online bill payment. Do you pay your bills online through the internet? You've got some bank or service where you just type in the number and who to send it to, and off it goes. It's a whole lot easier than writing a check. But when things go bad, they really go bad. Case in point, my online service I have with a bank had three entries for Verizon. My wife's cell phone, which is Verizon Wireless, our Fios, Verizon Fios, the internet service, and an old account, which was Verizon, the local telephone service. And wouldn't you know, in January, when I was paying the bills, I put in the Fios amount into the old Verizon local phone bill entry. $150, just about, was sent off then to an account that no longer existed. And I caught my error, obviously, the next month when the bill came and said I didn't pay the bill to the Fios bill. So I quickly remedied that and paid, the $300 then, plus any back fee that I owed them for not paying. But then I wonder, where is my money? So I go on to the my banking website and I write them a little note there that says, hey, I've paid this thing out to an account that no longer exists. Would you, undo that? Would you bring that money back into my account? And get no real joy from them. They say they called Verizon and I need to call them and talk with them myself. So I call Verizon. And I talked with probably four different people out there. And they said I have to call the bank and get a trace on the check or make sure that it was credited, because they said they don't find it anywhere. I call the bank back and talk to somebody there then. I talked to two people, actually, at the bank. And they say I need to call Verizon. So we go round and round and round. Eventually, then, at some point, I'm on the phone with four people at the same time. Two people from the bank and two people from Verizon and me. And we're all talking about how to get this thing resolved. They say they're going to send me a check. And it concludes rather nicely, but still I haven't seen a check. So the bottom line is, when you have an old account, make sure you close it out with your online bill payment. I just now got a phone call from Verizon that says, we've credited your money 2 days ago and you should have it. And I said, thank you very much. So I went out to my bank's website and looked, and of course, the money's not there. Got an email from Fernando, says a longtime listener. He says he needs a quick tip. I'm not a holder of mutual funds yet, and I don't understand how much to trust the historic charts of their performance. Are the fees embedded in their charts? I just wonder if the charts just display some bogus NAV prices over time, but the ongoing fees and costs of the funds get charged in investors' accounts in such a way that the NAVs do not get affected in the way they should. Hence, comparing charts of funds that have very different costs and fees, something gets lost to the unfair advantage of the higher cost funds. Is there any source of charts that you could really trust to take into account the ongoing fees? Well, I think mutual funds, the fees come out of the net asset value. So a chart of net asset values should incorporate the fees that are in the chart. Stockcharts.com is one of the good charting places I like to go to. Of course, if you're going through another intermediary, if you're going through an advisor, if you're going through a 401k provider that takes out a fee separately, then that's a whole nother story. Yeah. And you'll just have to subtract that fee each year from the total in an account in order to get a valid comparison. If you compare then with just getting your own account at Vanguard, then there shouldn't be an annual fee unless you are doing tricks like selling and within a certain short time period or buying when buying a load fund and that sort of thing. Hopefully we know now not to buy load mutual funds. Thanks for the email, Fernando. Hope good luck with that. Saw another really interesting video out on YouTube. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. It's a John Stossel TV show, actually. I think the title of it was called Bailouts and Bull. And in one of the segments, he talks to a lady who's written a book on how you cannot make it in America on a minimum wage. She tried it. She worked at a Walmart. She worked at some grocery store or something. She worked some other minimum wage job. And she just could not make it in America. And she said the book has sold quite well. A lot of schools are studying the book and how you absolutely can't make it in America on the minimum wage. Well, one guy took her up on the notion. He put all the cities, the major cities of the United States in a hat, pulled out Charleston, South Carolina, I believe it was, and with $25 in his wallet, got there and tried to find out if he could make it. And he did. He got a job. He first started out at a homeless shelter, so he got his food and shelter provided for him for a while. He was able to leverage up and buy a used truck for $1,000, which helped him get back and forth to his job. He got eventually got a very low-cost apartment. Maybe he had a roommate or something, I don't know, to share the costs. And in the end, he managed quite well, actually. So John Stossel went back to the woman and said, look, this guy made it. And this guy has a little criticism of the way that you didn't make it. He said, what about that $40 pair of new pants that you bought for, you know, $40? Couldn't you have done with a little bit less? What about where you stayed? You rented a motel room. Why didn't you get an inexpensive apartment and a roommate to help you make it and live more frugally? Well, this is one of the messages that needs to get out. And it's one of the messages that commercial advertising causes poor folks to swim upstream and want expensive stuff. You've got to keep up with what you see on TV, right? Who will advocate frugal living for them instead? Who will be an advocate that says, look, we don't need the $40 pair of pants. We don't need all the fancy things. We can live with less. Let's save our money for the stuff that we really need. Let's save some emergency money for many months down the road in case something happens. AIG's all in the news again because they're paying their executives millions of dollars in bonus. Millions, by the way, is just a fraction of the amount that they got in bailout money, which they're passing along to other banks outside of the country and so forth, the giant money laundering organization and operation, actually. Here's one thing that they don't talk about, though. What about how much does it cost to get the AIG logo on the Manchester United jersey? The United States is paying for Manchester United. And we don't even watch soccer. Go to rehab now. Rehab for active investors. Last week I talked about what does it mean to be an active investor. This week we're going to talk about seeking a higher power. Now, if you know where the data for all these segments about rehab comes from, it's from Index Funds Advisors on the web at ifa.com. And particularly Mark Hebner's book. Mark Hebner's the president of Index Funds Advisors. His book is called Index Funds, the 12-step program for active investors. 12-step program for active investors. And if you're going into rehab, if you're going into a 12-step program, you need some guidance like this book. And I highly recommend this book. It's the best book on investing in index funds that I know about. It's got it all in there, all kinds of full-color charts and graphics that talk about the history of funds, the performance of funds, the statistics on funds, why you can trust index funds over actively managed funds, and all of the things in step two are about the Nobel laureates that have studied stock markets and market pricing over the years, and their conclusion is you can't beat the market, so just invest in the market. Well, I trust the academics as opposed to the guys that are really in the market trading the money around. The academics don't have a financial interest in what they're trying to study. They're just trying to find the answer. They're trying to find the answer dispassionate of the outcome. You know, there's a quote that says, "It's hard to get a man to understand something if he's paid not to understand it." And the academics in this case, hopefully, the academics that are studying these markets are not being paid for a particular outcome on studying the markets. And I believe it's the case. Take, for example, William Sharpe, Nobel laureate in economics, 1990. He says, "Most of my investments are in equity index funds. Why pay people to gamble with your money?" Daniel Kahneman, Nobel laureate in economics, 2002, was asked the question, "So investors shouldn't delude themselves about beating the market?" His answer, "They're just not going to do it. It's just not going to happen." How about Merton Miller, Nobel laureate in economics? Question, I wonder if I might ask you, how do you think people should invest for the future? Should they buy index funds? His answer, absolutely. I've often said, and I know this will get some of your readers mad, that any pension fund manager who doesn't have the vast majority, and I mean 70%, 80% of his or her portfolio in passive investments, is guilty of malfeasance, nonfeasance, or some other kind of bad feasance. There's just no sense for most of them to have anything but a passive investment policy. If you're in rehab, you can trust the higher powers. You can trust the academics who have spent hours, days, months, years studying the markets and the results and performance of active managers in the markets. And their conclusion is, you can't beat the market, and neither can they. I hope you'll take the time to go to the IFA.com website, read more about steps one and steps two. There's a whole lot in there. I hope that you will get the book, Index Funds, a 12-step program for active investors. Just look it up in Amazon, type in Index Funds and Hebner, H-E-B-N-E-R, and you'll get right to that. It's a large coffee table book, beautiful pictures, and a great value. Also, and finally, go out to their website, take the risk capacity survey to see just how you should invest your investments and what amount of risk you can take, and then sign up for an account with IFA. Let them help you manage your financial freedom. All right, one more story I'll tell you before I let you go. I've been struggling with being an over-consumer for a long, long time. Guilty of the sin of overindulgence. Overindulgence in food. You know, working from home, the refrigerator is all too close. When I was at a cubicle somewhere, I actually had to physically move to another place to get food into my mouth. Here, it's just a few steps away. And naturally, sitting in the chair looking at a computer screen with food not so very far away tends to have an adverse effect on the physique, if you know what I mean. And one of my New Year's resolutions was to lose weight. And I want to lose a significant amount of weight. I'd like to lose 30 pounds, I guess, from the peak. And it just wasn't happening. We had been on the no-carb diet for a while. And back when I did that many years ago, six years ago, something like that, it worked fantastically when we first started it. The no-carb plan. Of course, changing from an American diet to a no-carb diet is radical. And the bottom line is you eat a whole lot less calories when you first switch into a no-carb diet because you don't know what to eat. Everything in your house is a carb. And so you got a strip of bacon here, you got an egg there. Once you've eaten the egg and the bacon, you're out of food. You can eat some lettuce maybe. But after a while, here's the thing. After a while, when you go to the grocery store, you say, "Oh, look at this. Here's low carb. Let me put that in a basket. Big thing of cheese. here's low carb. Cottage cheese. Here's low carb. All this various turkey meats and other kinds of meats and things. Here's a low-carb yogurt." And soon your refrigerator gets full again of food and you're stuffing your face with low carb stuff, but still high, large amount of calories. And then I think the bottom line of it all is, in losing weight, there's two things you need to do: eat fewer calories and exercise. And so I haven't been doing a whole lot of exercising by sitting in this chair. I hope to, when the weather is warm, do a lot more walking, do the daily walking, get up to doing running and jogging again, like I had talked about, the 12 steps of couch to 5K plan. I want to start that up again. When we go on vacation later this year, I want to be able to run 10K like I did 2 years ago. Continuous 10K. I'd never done it before in my life. I want to be able to do it again. I need to lose a few more pounds, I think, or else my knees will buckle before I try to do something like that. So let me tell you what I got for my birthday. And you might laugh. It is the cookie diet. Can you believe it? Yeah, we got a big, big box of packages of cookies. Each package has about 6 cookies in it. Of course, the cost of this thing is crazy. I don't know, was it $2 a cookie or something? But the cookies, you eat 6 cookies a day, spaced out at about 2-hour intervals, and then you eat a good dinner. You eat a high protein, high green leafy vegetable dinner, and that provides the bulk of your nutrition, I guess, for the day. But these cookies, they're not just oatmeal cookies and chocolate chip cookies. They are some kind of concoction of protein and fats and oils and things that supposedly satiate your hunger. And when you get up in the morning, the first thing you need to do within an hour is eat one of these cookies. And it's I've been on this cookie diet for 4 weeks now and I've lost 8 pounds. So 2 pounds a week. One of the things, one of the real products of this thing is it has focused the mind on just how much food one eats. And both my wife and I are on this cookie diet and we realize, oh my gosh, look at all the food we have in this house and we're not eating any of it right now. We're just eating these 6 cookies and the dinner, which doesn't amount to a whole lot. Which in the starvation diet, of course, the thing is when you stop starving yourself, I'm sure it all comes right back on. But hopefully through this, we will learn, just like Weight Watchers teaches you, how to eat an appropriate amount of calories for the appropriate amount of calorie expenditure that you're doing in a day. I mean, if I were an outside laborer, which maybe someday we will all be, digging ditches and filling them back in, we burn a lot more calories and we don't have to worry about watching the food intake that I take in. But at the present time, sitting in front of this computer screen doesn't burn a whole lot of calories, so I am not supposed to take in a whole lot of calories. I'll let you know how it works. I've lost 8 pounds so far. Like I said, I'd like to lose 22 more, which at the current rate would be another 11 weeks. So stay tuned. I'll let you know how it's going. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes knowledge to make money. And it takes the Mad Money Machine to get you that knowledge. I hope you will join me again next week, the last Friday of March. Have a great spring, everybody. Go visit IFA.com and let them help you manage your financial freedom. Thanks to music.podshow.com. We'll see you next week. Good luck, everybody.